You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Ian, look at this.
What, it's a police box. What on earth is he doing here? I mean, these things are usually on the street. I feel it. Did you feel it?
Faint vibration.
It's alive.
Earth Station Who, a fun mashup celebrating nearly 50 years of the Doctor Who universe. Hold tight. You never know where the TARDIS is going next.
Laugh hard.
Run fast.
Be kind. Doctor, I let you go.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station Who podcast. That's right, folks. We are finally making it to the 10th Doctor era. That's right, Tennant fans. We are on to your Doctor, or some people call him Dr. Hottie. And actually, this is actually the end of the 10th Doctor era. And things were winding down real quickly at this point. And we are going to be talking about The Warders of Mars, which aired back on, in, I guess it was 2015. November 15th of 2009. I get my dates all screwed up, folks. Wibbly wobbly timey wimey. You know how it goes. But it's going to be great to talk about this one. We've actually not ever talked about it here on the station. So it's going to be interesting to do, to hear what we have to talk about. And we've got a great crew to talk all about it. Of course, first, let's welcome Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
How are you this week, sir?
I'm good. We just came back from a great convention experience, which we're going to talk about. And good, ready to watch some. I was going to say new Doctor Who, but we have to wait still a little bit longer for that.
Yeah, we were going to talk all about it, but there's nothing to talk about really yet. But we also have the lovely Mary Ogles here.
Hi, everybody. It's great to be here.
Feels like we just saw you.
And it does. It feels like I just saw you.
And it's awesome. And it was actually great. We were all at Concaster Burris together, and it's only the second time that all three of us have been in the same room together. It's actually pretty awesome.
It was awesome. I had a great time.
I'm glad you did. And we're going to go back and dissect the con a bit and talk all about it in a few minutes. But, you know, we definitely want to hear from you guys at home. Please write us at eswpodcast@gmail.com. Definitely want to hear your thoughts on Concaster Burris, on what's going on with Doctor Who, or lack of what's going on with Doctor Who right now, or also, you know, this episode. We definitely want to hear, you know, your thoughts on this one. Please write us at, you know, of course, like we said, or eswpodcast@gmail.com, or you can call us at 404-963-9057. Also, of course, as we like to say, I want to thank each and every one of you who've been donating to the Patreon. We actually had, you know, some Earth Station Who stuff up there from Wholanta earlier this month, and probably we'll have a couple more panels up there very soon. So, you know, please, you know, let us know if you're enjoying that and stuff. And we could tell people are by donating. And you could do it by just going to the ESO Network webpage. And right on the top, there's a link to the Patreon. We, you know, slowly but surely, we're getting some numbers. And we have, you know, 17 people already donating. And 17 people more than, you know, I even expected. So thank you from the bottom of our hearts, from Mike, from Mary, from myself, from all of us here at the ESO Network. We do appreciate it. It's what helps keep the station afloat. All right, folks, let's get started with this week's Rants and Raves, where we find out about what's on our minds. And let's talk all about Concaster Burris. So that was about a week and a half ago as of this recording.
Yes, and it was our fourth?
Yes, sir.
Concay?
Yep.
Fourth Concay, they just keep getting better and better, and it was Mary's first Concay.
The folks in Huntsville, Alabama did not know what
to
do with us.
Yes, I was a Concay virgin.
Yes, she was, folks. You could see the shine all over her.
I was
We're not going to mention what you were.
It was awesome, though. You're not going to mention how I was deflowered at Con K?
No. Nope. That's out of all the things at Con K, that was just the one thing that.
that we're not going to talk about.
Nope. The things that happened and such. It was an interesting con for us. We, you know, had a nice table set up. And thank you to everyone there. Matthew and Bonnie and their crew were fantastic to us once again. And couldn't rave high enough about the people of Huntsville.
It was, yeah, it really was awesome. The costumes were awesome. The atmosphere was awesome. I highly recommend it for anyone who's would like to go to a smaller con. It was just a lovely time, and we got to interview some great people, and that was my first time interviewing somebody, and that was great, and we just had an awesome time.
Mm-hmm. On Saturday, we, you know, hung out and met a lot of people. Then on Sunday, we got to meet Katrin, and we also got to meet kind of sort of Mark Shepard. So it was actually, you know, it was great. You could hear as of the last episode that we released last week, we have both interviews up there. So feel free, listen if you haven't yet. And if this is, you know, your first full episode of Earth Station Who that you're listening to from people we've met at Con Castor Burris, welcome to the show.
I also have to give a shout out, a big shout out to the cosplayers and costumers at Con K. They are a great bunch of folks. They really dress up quite well. Whether it's, you know, characters from that we can recognize from Doctor Who, or, you know, wearing like TARDIS wear. I was going to say TARDIS dresses, but we saw some TARDIS suits. Mm-hmm. As well. And, you know, everybody was there wearing their finest. There were some people there that were dressed in non-Doctor Who costumes, and that's okay. That's okay. Even if you just want to be a banana, that's fine. But, you know, it just makes it that much more fun. I mean, it's one of the conventions. I mean, we talk about big costume conventions like Dragon Con and MomoCon and whatnot, but Con K is just really special to me. I love taking pictures of people in costumes because they just... You just get a feeling that they just are doing it for the fun of it. I mean, there's no like big costume, like, you know, not the professionals aren't there or whatever. They're not doing there. There's a contest, but it's not like, it seems like kind of just a formality. It's almost like just a nice Halloween themed Doctor Who themed party or something.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
There's a really nice vibe about it. There's, you know, people aren't trying to one up each other or anything like that. They're just having fun. And there were some pretty well thought out and well done costumes. I mean, it was really fun to just sit there and people watch for a while.
And all ages too. I mean, we have so many pictures of, you know, little kids in Doctor Who costumes was great. Whether it's the two separate families, one had a 12th Doctor with them, a little boy that was dressed really well as the 12th Doctor, and another family that had Missy, and to see them two together in pictures around the TARDIS was just a hoot. And then the little girl. I don't know. She couldn't have been. She was under 5 for sure. She might have been under 2 years of age. And she was all dressed up as the new 13th Doctor. That was just adorable.
Oh, yeah. There were some really adorable kids dressed up. It was almost like, you know, make me yearning for when William is that size. Now. So, yeah, it was neat. And I just love the atmosphere there, and they have so much activities and, you know, goodwill and everything. It's hard to even think of anyone that we even saw who was not friendly or talkative and such, even, you know, not even at our table, just in general.
Yeah, it's a good bunch of people. They've been doing it for a while. It really is a sort of a family of sorts that doesn't feel, you know, cliquish at all. It's just very welcoming. You know, there are people in the screening room, you know, the layout, even though they've used this hotel many times, The layout's still kind of awkward because they've got the some rooms like way over on the second floor of the hotel, and it just seems out of the way. You know, and where we were was not ideal. I mean, we did get a lot of traffic, but not, I mean, we weren't at the heart of everything. So the layout is kind of weird, but, I mean, that's, I mean, people still walk around and find you, and it's not difficult to just, you know, go around the corner and see other people. But, and I also have to, you know, also give a shout out to our good friend of the station, Kelly Yates, who was there. He had skipped last year. And so he was back this year. And I heard his panels were really good.
His panels were fantastic. I highly recommend, if you have a chance to see Kelly, to please go. He's a very talented artist. He's done work for Doctor Who comics and for a toy line and lots of other things. Very talented. I mean, at one point he just had a big pad of paper and he was sketching the 10th Doctor right in front of everybody. And he was showing us all the new stuff he's working on. And he's very personable, very approachable, very willing to answer questions about his art and his process and working with Doctor Who, and just a really fun person to go to a panel and listen to.
He has some great stories too. I mean, he got the privilege of actually visiting the set, I think last year, and being on the set of the TARDIS set when he went to London last year. So.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So I can tell you all about that. And yes, you know, I mean, the quote unquote big guests are always fun because we get to interview them and be on stage with some of them.
And yeah, and it was awesome to be able to mess up one of the stars' names. It was perfect, you know?
Yeah. Well, to be fair, Ketrin's name is not, I mean, you see it and it doesn't look the way it should sound for some reason.
I was talking about Matt Shepard. What do you mean?
Yeah, right.
You're right.
Man, if you had done that, that would have really
Yeah, you might not be here now.
I would have been in pieces in Huntsville.
But talking about Ketrin and talking to her, and, you know, she's so young. And that's one thing that kind of really surprised me a little bit. Not that, you know, I knew the age there, it was there, but just talking to her, I realized, wow, sure, she's just getting started in this business. I mean, she got right out of school. I mean, when she got her Doctor Who gig, and, you know, unfortunately things haven't gone like, you know, her way a lot in with her career. I mean, I don't think she's got a gig right now, which is just unfathomable to me. I mean, she's such a great person and a good talent.
Mm-hmm. She was sweet as can be. And, you know, she was everything I expected her to be, truthfully. And more so, she was friendly, she was nice, she was very giving, and, you know, she didn't hold back from what she talked about in the panel. You know, she doesn't have a ton of experience, but what she was very happy to talk about.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it seems like, I don't know if she's done a lot of these conventions either. It seemed like we had to kind of prod some stories out of her a little bit, but once she got going and told some really cool behind the scenes stuff about working with both, you know, two doctors. I mean, she got to work with 11 and 12.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And hopefully maybe 13 or more, which would be pretty awesome.
Yeah. I'd love to see her back. And what really came across for me is how genuine she was, how willing she was to answer questions, and patient and kind, and just a lovely person to talk to.
Yeah. So like the exact antithesis of Mark Shepard. No, just kidding. Just kidding. it was a flip though. I mean, well, Mark is a very seasoned, a veteran actor, been in almost everything, and doesn't mind telling you what he thinks when he's thinking it. Like, I don't even know if he has a filter, which is great. And he, you know, he can, you know, to use a British expression, he doesn't mind taking the piss out of you, but it's all in good fun. He wants to make sure that people are entertained, and he wants to, you know, have some fun with some folks. And he does exactly that. I don't think, you know, there was a harsh word in anything that he said. He was just having, like I said, a lot of fun. And at the end, I thought he said some really poignant and touching, moving remarks about about fandom, about being at these small shows, about embracing what you love. I thought it was really one of the highlights of the weekend.
Very much so.
He's definitely supportive of fandom. So, I mean, that, I mean, I think he maybe comes across, I don't know, as a bit aggressive simply because he knows what he knows his mind, you know, and he knows what he wants to say. And he has probably heard certain questions a million times. And I can understand that being tiring, but he was, you know, he'd joke around with people, but he was joking around. You could tell he was having fun, and the audience loved it and ate it up.
Well, that was the great thing about it. We actually at least had warning because of it. Poor Matthew the day before.
Yeah, Matthew didn't know what. Matthew just like
Matthew got blindsided.
Exactly. From what I hear, from what Kirby said, that. Basically, Matthew was there with his jaw on the table for half the time. He was just like, what just happened? And not in a bad way, just shocked.
No, I mean, Matthew was laughing about it. He was like, hey, I just got upstaged by Mark Shepard. What could be wrong with that?
Exactly. Exactly.
You can't argue with that. So,
well, you never want it to be the person who's moderating to upstage the guest anyway. Because that people aren't there to see Earth Station Who. I wish they were, but they weren't there to see Earth Station Who. They were there to see Mark Shepard or Catelyn Stewart. You know, it was just, you know, it was just, it's just awesome that basically, you know, they're there for the guests and we're there to talk to them and get information out of them. And basically, you know, he asked, at least he asked about the network. That was pretty awesome.
yes he did. He knows his letters.
That's, he does. I don't see a W up there.
Yeah, it was great fun though, and it was great to meet them both. I think, you know, if folks haven't listened to the last episode where we recorded both panels, I think they should definitely do so. Both of them have unique perspectives. And even if you're not I don't know why you're listening to this, but even if you're not like a huge Doctor Who fan, the interviews are great. You don't have to be. I mean, heck, Mark Shepard barely talked about Doctor Who because he's done so many other things.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that was the neat thing about it. He didn't even touch on Canton Everett, Delaware at all.
Not much in our panel, no.
No. Yeah. So, you know, because it was like one of the questions I had for him is, had he ever been approached by Big Finish? But it didn't even have time to come up, and it was fine. He definitely kept the people happy. So it was pretty awesome. So good on Mark Shepard, good on Catelyn Stewart, and of course, good on Concaster Burris. And one person we did forget to mention, of course, is our friend Kirby.
Yes. No, I mean, I can't imagine doing the show without Kirby now. I mean, he's been there every year that we've been there. Heck, he's been there years that we weren't there.
Exactly.
I think he's been going to this show since day one, right?
Yeah, pretty much. And boy, did his face, like, he tried giving us ribbing because we were talking to the guests and his podcast wasn't, so ha 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 ha. I'm not bitter there. There's no rivalry there. No, there's no rivalries in podcast. Yeah, so it was pretty awesome. Looking already forward to going back next year for Huntsville. They've already asked us back, so we will definitely be at Concaster Burst 2019. And yeah, new hotel,
need some announcements. Yep.
And a doctor will be there, a returning doctor, actually. So we'll be seeing Colin Baker again next year.
Yay,
woo-hoo. Colin. Woohoo. So it should be a lot of fun. And I'm sure they'll have other guests. And I'm hoping, you know, maybe some one we haven't talked to before, or a big name or a little name. You know, why not have Dan Starkey there, you know, finish off the gang, you know, so we could talk to all three of them.
That would be awesome.
That would be awesome.
So it should be a lot of fun. And, you know, if you guys, if you are in the range of Huntsville, Alabama, it is worth going to. I know with Hulanta ending next year, Con K is going to be the pretty much the major Doctor Who con in the Southeast. And, you know, because I don't count Florida as the Southeast. Florida is its own beast.
Mary, you, any argument from you there?
No, no, pretty much. It's a world unto itself.
You know, so Mary, you and I went to Gallifrey together.
We did.
And, you know, so how did Con K compare to that for you?
Well, I mean, they're quite different. The vibe is quite different. To be honest, I found Gallifrey to be a bit cliquish and harder to meet people there. Whereas Con K, it was very easy to meet people. And, I'm not sure why that is, you know, and it maybe just because Con K was a little smaller or something. I don't know. It just seemed less formal in a way. And I enjoyed that.
Well, that's old Alabama living and such.
Southern hospitality.
Exactly. And they were very happy to have us. And they set us up in a really nice location. We definitely had enough foot traffic at the table. And Mary, mm-hmm. it was just awesome hanging out with you and your sister.
Ah, it was awesome with you guys, too. I mean, I really enjoyed it. It's always fun when we get to meet up in person, which doesn't happen that often.
No.
And we just, you know, we just had a great time.
Exactly. It was great. And, you know, we even had Judy with us, and that was even a lovely time.
Yeah, the whole gang was there.
Yep, exactly. It was kind of weird having everybody there. But we had a great, you know, it was just great. And, you know, definitely listen to our last episode so you can hear the interviews. All right, other Doctor Who news. The only new Doctor Who news is that BBC had promised a Doctor Who trailer for after the England World Cup game on Monday, and they provided one. Just wasn't anything new. But
yeah, it was a teaser trailer, but it just really didn't show us anything we haven't seen before.
Nope. All it said was Doctor Who is returning in October. So take that for what it's worth, pretty much. So I did hear, though, you know, the other big news out of Doctor Who is it's been confirmed the whole cast of Doctor Who will be at San Diego Comic-Con.
Ooh.
So maybe we should take a trip to San Diego.
Big cast.
Yep, maybe we should.
Yep. You know what? San Diego doesn't need any more people. Like... And this Doctor Who cast is big enough, is huge in and of itself. So I don't know if Chris is going to be there, but then you've got what, the Doctor plus three companions. Yeah, it's going to be that's going to be a full.
Yeah, I think Chris is going to be there.
I've heard Chris is
one of the producers.
Yeah, just not. I did hear though that they are looking for a new moderator for the Doctor Who panel. So.
Yeah,
we're available.
We are available. Yes, use last week's episode as a for our resume.
our
audition tape will be last week's episode. We will fly. Yes, you know, if we do not mind being flown out.
Nope.
To San Diego, by whatever means necessary, in order to make that happen.
By whatever means necessary, by Stork, by Pterodactyl.
Yeah, good luck, Stork, on carrying me out there.
Well, it's better than a carrier pigeon. Well, definitely, we definitely volunteer since I know they are missing a moderator now. So, you know, we are definitely willing and able to go out there and jump up right in. And we're huge Doctor Who fans. So definitely, if interested, please, San Diego Comic-Con, we are available. And we work cheap. So with that being said, let's take a quick break and we will be back to talk all about the Waters of Mars.
temporal anomaly detected on Earth 2017. Is it the Doctor? No, it is a human using the number 42. They have the ultimate answer. They are having civil discussions about television, film, comics, books, and video games. Where is the fan rage? This is a threat to the Daleks. We must exterminate them. Humans must be hostile to each other so that the Daleks may rule supreme. Exterminate! Exterminate!
The 42 cast. Bad for Daleks, good for humanity.
Certain moments in time are fixed. This base on Mars, what happens here must always happen.
This is what?
It's an unknown infection and it's spreading.
Close down all water supplies.
Any one of us could already be infected. We've all been drinking the same water.
And if you take that back to Earth, one drop. Just one drop. Water is patient. Water just waits. Wears down the cliff tops, the mountains, the home of the world. Water always wins.
Why won't you help, Doctor, if you know all of this? Why can't you change it?
Because you die on Mars. You die today.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. Now we are going back to 2009 to the final season with David Tennant. Actually, it wasn't even a season. It was just a series of specials. And
four specials. You know, it just dawned on me that there were four specials, and I don't know if that was that in reference to the four knocks.
Oh, wow.
I never thought of that, but probably not.
Is that a real connection, or I was like, okay.
It's a real conspiracy theory.
Wow. Did Russell T. Davies have that much foresight?
I was going to say, is Russell T. like planning out that much? But, you know.
Yeah, that sounds more like a Moffat thing than an RTD thing.
I don't know. I think Moffat gets a lot of the reputation there that he is all this like deep planning and everything. But as we can see plainly from this episode, this special, as well as other stuff too. I mean, man, RTD was really into all of that too. In fact, you know, the groundwork for this episode, what happens in this episode, was made right from the beginning. Not from maybe the first season, obviously, because that wasn't David, but from David's first appearance on. It felt like it was all leading up to, in some ways, this, you know?
Oh, sure. I could totally see that. And yeah, everything was headed towards this. And this was an interesting turn for David's doctor too, because at first he was very timid because he knew once he found out where he was, he knew he had to get out of there. That it was something
he did not want to be involved.
No, not at all.
And yet he did, like, because he never, you know, he didn't leave. And you know, you could argue that it is against his nature to not help people. I mean, because he does, right? But then there's an element to it with David's doctor that I don't think we'd seen in any other doctor before, where he's got this arrogance. You can call it a little bit of survivor's guilt mixed in with, I'm the last one, you know, I can rule the universe if I want to.
Time Lord triumphant, as he said.
Victorious.
Yeah. Well, he's bitter.
Yeah.
And he's angry but it turns very self-serving.
Oh, at the end, very much so.
Mm-hmm.
And this one was a lot of fun, though. You had, in just an hour, a lot of character development, not just from the Doctor, but with his supporting cast. And it was a very well-done supporting cast.
Yeah, especially with Adelaide Brooke.
Mm-hmm. She was awesome.
Yeah, it was really important because, you know, she's the centerpiece of this whole story. And if either she's not written well or she's not played well, this whole thing just falls to pieces and doesn't feel like it's worthy of anything. But no, both in the writing by Russell T, as well as the performance by Lindsay Duncan, right?
Yes, Lindsay Duncan.
Yeah, I mean, it's just she's just great. I mean, you know, we've had historical episodes where there be people that you think, even though if they're not really fixed points of time and space, they are at least like well-known characters that, I mean, we just talked about the one with Dickens, you know, met Shakespeare, mm-hmm. Met several other famous, you know, folks over the years of Doctor Who. And in this one, it's almost like this character is like a historical figure, but we haven't got there yet. So they have to make her up mm-hmm. as a historical figure and treat her like a historical figure. And then we have to believe it. And that's not an easy task.
No, but they do a very good job at characterization. But I think, like you said, I'm not sure it would have worked without her performance. I mean, her journey is very believable, and her journey is almost, in this episode at least, is almost the opposite of the journey that the Doctor goes on. She goes from being very afraid and unwilling to sacrifice herself to in the end giving up her life for the greater good, whereas the Doctor kind of takes the opposite journey. And yeah. Kind of by the end, he's playing God.
I really like, you know, we've seen him before, these, you know, stuck in a station episodes from the classic series all the way through, right? Where mm-hmm. the Doctor and a companion end up on a station and something goes wrong. And, you know, and I think the one thing that makes this like kind of enjoyable, even though we've seen it a bunch of times, is they always seem to do a really good job, whether it's classic series or, you know, this, the new Who, getting characters, writing interesting characters, finding interesting actors to play them so that, you know, any one of these characters, you really care about them. So as they play 10 little Indians with them, you know, like we care when something happens to them, when we're sad when they die.
Exactly. And you actually feel for some of these characters when they get hit by the water. And it's just like, wow, even just one drop.
Mm-hmm.
It, really well done.
Yeah, right. They have enough time to think about what's going to happen to them before it happens.
Right.
And that just makes it just horrifying to watch them being transformed. This is, I think, is one of the best monster effects, because it's actually a kind of simple effect in a way. I mean, it's water.
Well, exactly. And then they take away their chapstick. It's perfect. Yeah. So it was interesting to see, because at first when I heard about the story, Waters of Mars, first thing I thought, Ice Warriors. And, you know,
they're mentioned,
but when you heard about the story at first, I said, oh, awesome. They're bringing back the Ice Warriors after all this time. Because up until the, you know, when they meet them with the 12th Doctor, they basically hadn't seen them since the Third Doctor era, since the Paladin story.
With very, very few exceptions, Daleks and Cybermen, of course, and the Master being some of them. Russell T didn't seem to be interested in bringing back a lot of the past monsters.
Right.
And we didn't think Ice mm-hmm. Warriors was going to be on the table at all. So.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so it was.
It's cool that they even get a mention in this.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I loved when the Doctor's like speaking to it in ancient Martian.
Yes.
And they were looking, yeah, that's not a real language. It was just, there was a lot of great things. You know, I love the scenes where they had to get around the base and everything, and they're running and, you know, to the different rooms and said, haven't you guys ever thought like a cart system or a bike? And Adelaide was like, you know, if for every pound of weight, it's this much tonnage of fuel. And it's like, yeah, whatever.
But by the end, she's like, yeah, bikes would have been a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Something.
Yeah.
Roller skates.
Exactly. And it's a typical, you know, base under siege. They have to running through the base and everything. It was awesome.
Yeah. I will say the robot, very annoying. That is the one. I love this episode. This is one of my favorite episodes of the Tenet era. That robot takes me out of the story every time.
Yeah.
I don't mind having a robot, but the way it's portrayed is just does not work. It's very clumsy, and the whole gadget thing, just you just want to fire it with Adelaide's laser gun because it is annoying.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, this out of, you know, a whole episode, it didn't seem like there was a ton of green screen other than, you know, when the Doctor was on Mars, you know, with the backdrops a little bit, even though it was a lot of quarry, as always. But
back to the quarry.
Exactly. But it seemed a lot of practical effects in this. Because, you know, everything with the water, everything with the station, and the only, you know, real, you know, models it looked like was the Bowie station, which was awesome to name it Bowie station.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Bowie base one.
Exactly. Yes.
Which was awesome. And, you know, for anyone who has to look it up, please go ahead, look at why they named it Bowie base one, you know, basically, but the rocket ship also blowing up was the big explosion other than the big nuke at the end. So, but it was neat, you know, so it was mostly the actors dealing with the actors, not some CGI monster or something, which is pretty good for Doctor Who.
So you get
I think that.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, I was just going to say, I think that's one of the reasons why you get those great performances, because they really get to act against each other.
Yes. Yeah. That's the one thing that's why I think, you know, Britain does really good with these theatrical type dramas. And these are these station ones where they're all trapped there, you know, feels like it could be a play, you know, like it wouldn't take much to put this on stage somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. That could be a lot of fun. And then, you know, you could do older Doctor Who stuff and just have, you know, some guy in a plastic, you know, costume or something with a zipper in the back, or, you know, monsters like that. Oh, wait, that was old Doctor Who. Never mind. Yeah, Bubble Wrap City. It's awesome. You could see the strings on the spaceships. But that's what's the charm of Doctor Who back then. But back to this one. It was neat to see. And I love how, you know, instead of having to go all these backstories, the Doctor say, I know who you are and I know who you are. He did point this out, but they had little flashes of their obituaries and such, which was really neat to see. And, you know, it was like, that's how the Doctor was recalling who all these people were. You're only 27, you know, that type of thing. And it was just really well done.
Yeah, I like the way they did that. That could have been very clumsily done, but it really worked, how he would just have these flashes of just like he was reading articles on a screen. And, you know, it just really, it added to the feeling of sadness and horror, the kind of haunting tone of this whole episode.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a psychological episode. It's deceiving because it feels like an action-oriented episode, and it is in a way, but really at the core, it's a very psychological episode, because it's about the Doctor struggling and Adelaide struggling with their inner fears and inner demons, and what is the right and moral thing to do, and can you overcome your fear to do it?
Absolutely. I mean, you feel like, yeah, because we don't really know much about these monsters or what they want. We don't, I mean, that's really superfluous. That's not really the point of this episode. They're cool. They do what they need to do. But, you know, when you try to really figure out what their motivations are and what they want, it just doesn't seem to make any sense. And that, you know, I'm not saying that's a knock on the episode, because like I said, it's not really about that. It's about the Doctor's journey. And, you know, I was trying to think of another doctor where we've got this kind of another actor, another performance by someone who was the doctor, where we get something like this dramatic as far as where his character goes. And I can't think of it. I mean, they really took a lot of liberties here. And, you know, even though, like I said, they set that up with David, like in one of his, like in his second storyline as the doctor, he tells one of the cat nuns, he's like, if you don't like it, you can't take it to a higher authority because there is none. It stops with me, right? I mean, he comes out of the gate swinging. Like, I am the guy. And we see it in other episodes too, like The Runaway Bride, right? Where he gives the Spider Lady a chance and she just doesn't take it. And then we have all these freaky shots of him looking like himself, like a demon from hell. But the performance by David here and the way that this is written, it's very uncomfortable what the doctor sort of does and turns into.
It almost seems in some ways, and he seems more like the master or someone like Rassilon or someone instead of the doctor.
Yeah. See, I don't even think so though. I think he still feels like the doctor is making these decisions, but yet it's an extreme version of the doctor. Like it's not like, because Rassilon, I don't know as well, but I mean, as far as the master goes, the master wouldn't give a crap about any of them. He'd just leave them. Like he wouldn't want to save them at all. The doctor does want to save them. But he also wants to, you know, flex his power muscles as being like, you know, and it sort of implies that as a Time Lord, you are granted powers over time and space that he rarely taps into.
No, very much so. He basically is like, there is no other one. I have full control. I control the destinies and I can control what time does from this point on.
There's this sort of battle that happens. At one point he says, you know, I can change this. And then like a monitor or something next to him, a console blows and knocks him off his feet as if time and space is fighting back, you know, and you have all these wonderful shots and edits where it seems like the station is coming alive to stop him from doing what he needs to do. And it's just, it's really well done and well put together. David, I've always said this, and I don't mean this as a knock on anybody else who's ever played the Doctor, but I honestly think that David, you know, is able to stretch out and show things that we have never seen and maybe never ever will see again from the Doctor. And this and the Family of Blood saga are two examples that I point to and go, yeah, right there. I mean, these are both and very different performances as well.
I definitely very much so. And, you know, and the Doctor, David was so comfortable with being the Doctor at this point, he took it to another level in this episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he really did. He's really the perfect Doctor to play around with these questions of power and absolute power and how easily it would be to be corrupted by that power, and how the only thing that's keeping him in check is himself. And it's one of the reasons why he surrounds himself with these other people, these companions, to remind himself not to play God. And now here he is companionless and losing his grip on that. And he faces the consequences of his actions. And, you know, it's a very interesting question to explore. I mean, this episode sort of reminds me of another episode called with the 10th Doctor called Midnight, which is also a very psychological episode. And you know, when it's funny, RTD is often remembered as more of a jokey writer or an action writer, or even like almost like a rom-com writer, but when he puts his mind to it, he comes out with these very deeply psychological episodes that explore these very profound questions of power. And, you know, it's definitely very timely for what's going on in our world today. And David's a master at playing that character. I have to give him a lot of credit for that. You know, in the hands of a lesser actor, it might have been, you know, it might have been too much. It might have been overblown, but he dials it back just enough to really, really make you feel the anguish the doctor is going through.
Exactly.
And we've seen his work, you know, just real quick, he's seen his work outside of Doctor Who since then, where he's played, you know, villainous characters to such a degree that you forget that he was the Doctor. like you know, when you're watching Jessica Jones, you might at first go, oh yeah, it's a Doctor Who guy, but by the second episode that he's in, you're like, Doctor Who? Like, you're like you're just like, nope, don't, this is not the same guy. And I guess the new movie that he's in, where he plays a villainous character too, he's doing a very good performance in it as well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's interesting too, because with everything the Doctor did to try to change time, it backfired.
Well, everything he did, he got stopped by, as Mary pointed out, the one thing that always keeps him in check is a companion. Mm-hmm. Usually it's a human companion. Mm-hmm. And yes, you know, Brooke stops him by her actions.
Exactly. By her committing suicide.
Yes.
Yeah, basically, it continues, because if she didn't die on Mars, her granddaughter wouldn't have become the famous pilot that, you know, was the first one to reach another planet. And, you know, and out of the solar system, and to be, you know, and her lineage to do all these great things, you know, the Doctor was ruining that just to save these three people's lives.
And it's interesting you said that, Mike, because, you know, obviously, and if you listen to a couple of episodes when we were talking about suicide on our Station One podcast, it's interesting they use that word, because technically, yes, she does take her own life, but I don't, for some reason, well, suicide seems like the wrong word, because she's not, it's a, not a selfful, it's not, yeah, it's a completely selfless act what she does. And it's a necessary act. It's not one of, it's not coming from one that most suicides come from, which is pain, depression, escape, right? It's coming from like a more nobler cause of trying to right a wrong and ensure, yeah. I mean, ensure the hope of the future.
Yeah. It's more of a self-sacrifice type of thing. Sacrificing herself for the greater good.
She did sacrifice, yeah. But it's still suicide.
Well, I mean, like I said, technically it is, but I wouldn't personally label it that way, just because it just, the connotations suggest that she gives up. That's what she's doing. And she's not, she, that as a matter of fact, she's, that's her, the ultimate sacrifice to fight what she's trying to fight.
Oh, exactly.
And I think that's the beauty of her character. She's smart enough throughout the whole thing. She's smart enough to know what to do in certain situations, that it doesn't feel like a cop out. It feels earned. Like, this is what she needs to do, and she's not afraid to do it.
Well, exactly. I agree with that. But it was just like, suicide, sacrifice, it was exactly the opposite of what the Doctor had planned on. The Doctor had broken the rules, you know, of, you know, a fixed point in time by pulling her and the two others out of Mars. You know, they were all supposed to die up there in the space station when it blew up.
Yeah, it's like, I think what adds to the horror of it is that it's the Doctor who forces her into that action in her mind.
Yes.
And so even though, I mean, you could technically call it a suicide, because she was the one who decided to blow up the base, but that's a different act. I mean, when shooting yourself is very intimate, is very personal. Yes, in her own home. And it's the Doctor who forces her into that course of action by his actions.
I definitely want to see. I mean, they flash by so fast. I'm like, do they explain how they got to Earth? Like certainly the news crews that are like, this big explosion on Mars, and yet two survivors are here on Earth. How does this happen?
Yes, I thought about that too. I'm like, don't they wonder how they got there?
Explosion was so big, it just blew them back to Earth.
Well, exactly. And back to Earth on the same day, that because they had been reported up there, 10 hours earlier or so, because they were out of touch for 10 hours because of the sunspots.
Mm-hmm.
And so they couldn't be in communication with Earth. So it's like, but they were, there's no way to get from Mars to Earth at that time in 10 hours, or let alone 5 minutes or something, you know?
Let me ask you a question. And as we head into this, new era of the 13th Doctor, and all the images that we see are rainbows and bright colors and all that. Do you think a sense of darkness is necessary for the character?
I'm not sure it has to be darkness, but a sense of depth has to be there. I don't think it's going to work unless there's an underlying pathos in the character, simply because there just would be from all the experiences they've had. I mean, it can't be a shallow character, or it's not the Doctor. There has to be a lot of levels there. And I mean, from Chris Chibnall's prior writings, I think it will be a multi-layered character.
Because I can't imagine, obviously, if you look at the history, and I'm not going to run through all 13, but just as an example, the first one's a grumpy Doctor. The second one doesn't feel like he's got any darkness in him at all. And then, neither does really the third Doctor. And then, but then you get to New Who, of course, you've got, before that, I know that both Colin, they wanted to try a little darkness with that character right off the bat, of course, because he's strangling his companion in day one. And then,
do you blame him though?
No,
seeing who the companion was.
And then I'm surprised no one strangled Mel, to be honest with you. And then Sylvester, we've learned through Cartmel and others that they had some plans for him to be a little dark, so I think that, with New Who, I think you have to say that almost all of them have a bit of darkness to them. Maybe Matt's was a little bit more melancholy than dark, you know what I mean? But mm-hmm. like there was a sadness to him, like a sad clown, rather than a angry place of anger. And I don't even know if anger is the right word.
They were waiting for anger for 12.
Well, yeah, certainly we get that with 12. Certainly, but it is, I love the juxtaposition with David Tennant's Doctor, because like you said, it's like the rom-com. It's like, he's the, Mike, you mentioned it too. He's like the Dr. Hottie, right? I mean, he looks great. He looks like he's always smiling. He looks like he's the fun doctor, right? The one that you want to hang out with. But we see more moments of darkness and really just fearful moments where you're generally scared of this doctor, I think, than any other doctor that played him before and has played him since.
Exactly. A lot of times, a lot of people say part of David Tennant's charm as the Doctor was he was the most approachable, in some ways the most human, you might want to say.
Well, sure. I mean, he fell in love with a human lady.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So it was just very interesting to see. And a lot of it was that part of David and his character was, he was also the most dangerous when he was without a companion.
And then Mary, you mentioned depth. So for you, like going forward, we don't necessarily need to see like a confident, overconfident Time Lord pop out every once in a while, but just as long as there's something going on.
Well, there has to be, I mean, there's darkness in everything. And I'm not saying that that won't be there. It doesn't necessarily have to be the defining characteristic, though. I mean, as long as the performance and as long as the writing is multi-layered, you know, as long as we're exploring a lot of different things, you know, it can be happy, sad, dark, or all of the above all in one episode, which it often is in an episode of Doctor Who. You know, and I think it will be. I hope it will be. Certainly Jodie Whittaker is capable of portraying that. You know, seeing her other performances, she is certainly an actor that brings depth to her performance. You know, she's very believable. And I think she'll bring that same depth to her portrayal of the Doctor. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what she does with it, especially after, the angry Doctor that 12 was. And I loved Peter Capaldi. That isn't a dig or anything. He's one of my favorite Doctors. But I'm, you know, I we don't always have to explore that. So no. I hope we're gonna, you know, do something completely new.
Well, the worst thing that can happen is that she's boring.
Ooh. Yeah, and I don't think that's gonna happen.
No.
Yeah, I don't think it's gonna happen either. I don't think it's gonna happen either. So, but I really, you know, I haven't seen this one in a while, and as I was watching, I was like, man, this is way better than I ever get credit for. I mean, yes, it won a Hugo Award, so we all know it's an amazing episode. But because I think generally speaking, I just tend to forget about this one. I mean, it was, you know, one of four specials. It's right before, you know, David's End. You know, and as cool as it is, it's not like a big, you know, like a part of the lexicon. It's not like, oh, the Master's back, or some part of like the franchise, you know. But I think, you know, you can easily forget that it's one of probably the best performances and the best dramatic things, that characteristics that ever happens to the character.
Oh, mm-hmm. Very much so. And that was the great thing about this era, the four specials. It gave David and the writing crew and the development crew, all them, time to flex their muscles with these. I liked all four of them. I even liked Planet of the Dead. I enjoyed that story. And it was neat to see this going in, knowing it's David's final hurrah. And, you know, all the way up to the last part of the regeneration story, I enjoyed it. You know, there's certain things about that one I didn't like, but we've talked about that in the past, so it's not worth rehashing right now. But David was wonderful in this, and I would definitely say, if somebody hasn't watched Doctor Who before, to give this one to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, a lot's been made fun of the whole, like, I don't want to go, you know, thing with David, that it was maybe a little bit too much. But there is precedent for it, and it's right here in this episode when the Ood shows up. I mean, he goes from being like a cocky SOB to be really questioning his behavior to all of a sudden just downright crying. Like, he's just on almost practically on his knees, you know, with not wanting to go, you know.
Well, exactly. And almost like, oh, I got to get this done and this done, and now I've got to, oh, I went too far, didn't I? You know, mm-hmm. it was almost like you could see the regret coming across his face. And almost like after she killed herself or sacrificed herself or whatever, we're not going into that discussion again. But the look on David's face, going from like full, I have all the power in the galaxy, I am the Lord of Time, to, oh my, you know, what did I do?
Yeah,
exactly.
And to being a broken, like a broken man in front of this Ood that's not even there, you know, like he's just, and you're kind of like wondering, like, what? Like, I don't know. He seems like he doesn't want to go because there's so much to do, but you're kind of like, what does he want to do? Like,
yeah, I think it's more that he's afraid.
Yes.
He's afraid to go. I mean, yes. That's my sense of it.
Yeah, I think so too.
And he's fallen apart psychologically. chronologically. He's this whole series is him, kind of his, you know, his death ride. He knows he's going to die, and he's running from it the whole series.
And keep in mind, it's not the Doctor that's going to die. It's him, like this incarnation. So
personality.
Right, his personality. And it's really interesting because a lot of times the Doctor just, he knows that, you know, he's going to live through most of any, you know, near death scenarios, or death scenarios, I should say. And just pop back up like it's a cold, right? But this shows, like, David's performance is like, no, there's a lot more to it than that.
It's not Gallifreyan flu.
I mean, he is not ready, and he's really not ready up until the very end. I mean, he accepts it at the end because he has to, but I don't think he's ever ready.
And I think he's probably, like, out of all the Doctor rejuvenations, what am I saying, right? Like, his is the most painful. And not just because, David Tennant's going to play.
Oh, I agree.
But as a character, like, the rest of them, he's just, well, you know, and somebody doesn't even get a chance to, like, just steps out of the TARDIS and gets shot. Like, he doesn't really have a chance to mull over it, right? But in this one, I guess it's because he really gets a long time to prepare, right? And it's almost like the longer time you have to prepare, the worse it is.
Right. Well, it's an interesting thing to explore because, I mean, death comes to us in many different ways. Sometimes you're Danny Pink and you just step in front of a car. And sometimes you have a terminal illness, you know, and you're watching your death come, you know, for 6 months until it finally happens. And we hadn't seen that in a Doctor before. And I mean, that's actually a very human thing to explore in a story. And it was a very interesting track to take. I mean, I don't think they're all that successful when they get to the very end, actually. I think that could have been written better. But this episode, I think, is brilliant in its way for exploring that. His fear and his unwillingness and his just utter despair and not being ready to go.
I agree. I think this could be, you know, as far as Russell T. Davies, like, this is his best last, like, this is his best last episode, you know.
Mm-hmm. And also another great episode directed by Graham Harper.
Yes.
So nothing wrong with that.
Yes, he directed The Caves of Androzani.
Exactly.
Exactly. To some of the people out there, Caves of Androzani is one of their favorite classic series episode storylines.
Yeah, it always gets high marks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, all right, we've been going on for quite some time with this. Any final thoughts before we go ahead and rate?
I'm thirsty.
Okay. Just don't drink the water on Mars.
Oh, let's talk about water.
See, kids, this is what happens if you eat carrots. You know, just remember that.
Check the meat, kids. Don't go with those vegetables. They'll kill you.
Vegetarianism. Ah.
That's what it was really about.
Exactly. They would have been fine if they would not have eaten those vegetables. Those carrots are killers. Sorry, Bugs Bunny.
No vegetables and drink booze. That's the theme.
Alcohol is your friend, my friend. That's what we have to say. All right. 1 out of 5 TARDISes, 1 being the worst, 5 being the best. Mary, go ahead first.
Oh, boy. I am going to give this one a 4.75. And I am docking the 0.25 because that robot annoys the heck out of me. They should have left that out. But otherwise, the story is wonderful. It's very well written. The acting is amazing from everyone, from minor parts to the lead characters. Watching the Doctor and Adelaide Brooke go on their journeys and come together and clash and come together and clash. I mean, it's absolutely fascinating to watch. And the production design is great. The costumes are great. I have a minor quibble about the sound mix, which often happened in the RTD era for some reason, the music is too loud, but it doesn't, you know, it doesn't detract from the story. The story is so good that, I mean, this is one I would highly recommend for anybody looking to start out with Doctor Who. It's really a gripping episode. So, 4.75.
Okay. Mikey.
I'm going to agree. 4.75. That sounds great. I don't know. I was trying to isolate why I can't give it a 5 altogether, but there's just some things that are just not 100%. They're at like 99.5%. But there's apart from Brooke, I think that like the other characters are good, but they're not like uber good. Like I there were some that I didn't really like. The girl that gets trapped in the closet, I didn't really care if she died or not. I think they could have done a little bit better that way. Although it's not, again, it's not what this is about. So as far as taking chances on, you know, redefining the Doctor or playing around with that as a character, this is like, you know, a 10 out of 5 as far as taking those risks and pulling it off. This is a great classic episode. I think it's one that everybody needs to watch. I don't know if I'd start someone else on it. I mean, it's strong enough, but I don't know if you really get it as far as the Doctor, how amazing this is for that character, unless you're familiar with it, with the Doctor already. Cause if you go in and this is your first time, you might think, well, he's just crazy. Like and then you might be disappointed that he's not crazy like this all the time.
Oh, sure. No, it totally makes sense. All right. For me, I'm going to have to give this one. I'm going to do a 4.5. I have to agree with Mary. The robot was horrid. but, you know, I did care about the characters. I did care about the woman in the closet. I was like, it was depressing as hell. She was watching the video, I guess, of her daughter and knowing that she would never see her again. And then you hear going through the change. And it was just so well done. Even the guy who was controlling the robot was sad as heck watching him, you know, just from the one drop. You guys go ahead. You know, yeah. All you said, it was one drop. It was heartbreaking to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I like that there was no assholes in the crew. Like they all were willing to do what was necessary. Right. They had personality clashes, but they all were willing to sacrifice. Like when that guy got the drop, I didn't, you know, he could have easily said, mm-hmm. I'm fine, you know, and nobody would have noticed. But instead he's like, nope, I gotta stay.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's like, I've got to stay behind. And it was just like, wow. And the one guy who had to be some kind of backstory between him and the commander, one who was her second in command.
Yeah. There seemed like there was a relationship between them at some point that didn't end well.
No, exactly.
Did not quite work out.
Exactly. And, you know, he did the right thing by sacrificing himself, but it was just like, yeah, it was rough. It was really, really rough, but it was a great story all the way around. And when I say 4.5, it's a very high 4.5. And, you know, that damn robot was the only thing that pulled it down for me. So definitely worth checking out, and we definitely want to hear from you guys. Please write us at eswpodcast@gmail.com. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this week, and you know, we will be back again in 2 weeks, and we are actually going to have a very special guest. Mary, do you want to announce who's going to be on the show next time?
My sister!
Yep, we're going.
Yay! Finally talked her into it. She's chosen some great episodes. Definitely tune in. She's an amazing authority on Doctor Who. She knows way more than me. She's watched it religiously ever since we were kids and has been a fan for basically her entire life. Mm-hmm. And is just a lot of fun to talk to.
Yep. And Barbara has chosen Time of the Angels. So we are going to be going to the 11th Doctor era, and actually the first time the Doctor and River get together, at least chronologically as the series goes on.
Sort of, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. And so we will be actually reviewing both parts of that storyline. So we will be looking at the Time of the Angels, and we also be looking at
Flesh and Stone.
Exactly. So it should be a lot of fun. And, you know, so everyone, as Mike said earlier, as we talked off the air, he's going to bring his red pumps to talk all about the show.
You know it.
And we have
spoilers.
To remember.
Spoilers.
Exactly. That's a spoiler I can live without seeing, but it's okay. It's okay. We're ready. We're open-minded on the show. So definitely we will see you guys in 2 weeks. Mary, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. This was a great episode to talk about. I'm really glad we had a chance to do it.
Excellent. You want to plug your artwork?
Just, you can find me at maryogle.com or on Etsy as eVision Arts.
Excellent. And Mr. Mike?
As always, it's my pleasure. And it was a pleasure hanging out with both of you at ConK. I can't wait to do it again. I think our next scheduled appearance altogether is at Dragon Con. Am I correct?
Yes, sir. And I've actually gotten word we will be doing an Earth Station Who panel at Dragon Con. So more news on that as it comes closer. So,
I'll be wearing my red pumps. No, not at Dragon Con.
Yeah, your feet will
that's
be...
That's a lot of walking.
Yeah. Your ankles will be swollen, dude. And on that note, we'll see you here next time. Peace. And we're done.
You have been listening to Earth Station Who, a bi-weekly pop culture podcast dedicated to all things Doctor Who, featuring talents from across the universe. All topics on the show are the sole opinions of the individual and are used for entertainment value alone. You can subscribe to our podcast up on iTunes, Stitcher, or follow our blog at www.esopodcast.com. You can also follow us up on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+. If you enjoyed the show, please leave feedback up on iTunes.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.